brought to you by CGTN Europe.
Hello, I'm Stephen Cole. Welcome to the Agenda podcast. On this edition of the podcast, we look at how scientists have fared in the search for the COVID-19 vaccine and consider whether there is a silver bullet that rids the world of this deadly virus. First on the podcast, I speak to Helen Yang, Senior Director of Global Strategy and Business Development at Sinovac Biotech. She tells me how her company has been doing in the fight against COVID-19.
Sinovac is developing an inactivated COVID-19 vaccine by inactivating the live viruses. So basically, we kill the live part of the virus, but we keep the shell of the protein of the virus and then inject into the human body to induce the antibody to against the viruses, but people will not get infected after receive the vaccination.
And how does your vaccine differ from the vaccines being developed around the world?
I think for the roadmap are different. Different from the process are different. We're using live virus and doing inactivation, purification, and then adding the aluminum hydroxide as an adjuvant. It is a mature technology that has been used for in many different type of vaccines and millions of these kind of vaccine being used on human in the past. So it is a reliable technology. But others, as far as I understand, there are mRNA and vector-based vaccines or new technology. And as far as we saw from the published literature, that the in terms of safety profile, inactivated vaccine shows a better safety profile as far as we learned. And we have the side effect reported less than 20%. And also we don't have a grade 3 adverse reaction. And we don't have high fever after using the vaccine in the trial, phase one and phase two.
So who are you testing it on and where are you testing it?
We are currently testing the vaccine phase three in Brazil, in Turkey, and also a smaller trial in Indonesia. And in Brazil, we are testing above 9,000 volunteers for healthcare workers. But in Turkey, we will start with healthcare workers at a phase one, and then we will move into the general population, which we expect to enroll 13,000 volunteers. And in Indonesia, it is also a general population, but it's a smaller size trial, so a 1,600 volunteer.
Have you encountered any problems with those tests and trials?
I think currently the trials are undergoing very well. Like in Brazil, we have already a few thousand volunteers being inoculated either with the vaccine or placebo, because now it is still blind. We don't know who gets what. But purely from the observation of people who get in the vaccine, we didn't see any vaccine-related severe adverse reactions. So we think in terms of the safety observation, so far so good. But we still need to wait until the trial is completed and to do the unblinding to have a further analysis on the results.
Why did you choose those countries to trial the vaccine?
Right. Firstly, because for new vaccine development, phase three trial, which is to test the efficacy and also the safety in a large population, is the last stage of the research. But as you may know, that in China, we have been locked down for months. So the reported cases is very limited. And however, when we trying to test the vaccine for efficacy, we need to have a certain level of incident rate. So that's why we're not able to do it in China. And then we start to seeking a international partnership. And thank for Brazil partners and also the local a strong FDA body. And they reviewed our case and approved us to conduct a trial there. As well as in Turkey, we recently kicked off the phase three trial in Turkey in September as well. And there are other places we're applying, like we also recently obtained approval from Chile that my colleague is there and trying to work with the local university to kick off another phase three trial in Chile.
And what would you say is or has been the biggest challenge so far in getting that vaccine?
Yeah, I think actually along the way of this development, we have facing many different type of challenges from different stages. I think the most challenging one in the past would be where we can do the phase 3 trial, but now that was concluded and we're carrying on the phase 3 trial. So for the next step, which is also the ultimate objective for us to develop a vaccine, which is to deploy the vaccine and use it to control the disease. However, everyone knows that the virus travels across the border. It doesn't need to have any license. It can go anywhere. But for vaccine, if you need to use in different territories, you have to got the local license. So also we would like to encourage a true international partnership on recognizing the regulatory approval, or there are some collaborations on regulatory affairs among different countries. And I think that would be a speed up the process, and it will be benefiting on providing a early access of vaccines in different countries.
If you can offer me your opinion of when you think that vaccine might be ready.
Well, for our case in Brazil, I think it is the phase 3 trial that we started. The first trial we started, I think we are, that's a case-driven trial. We need to, after we inoculate the volunteers, we need to collect the confirmed cases. And based on the scientific study, there should be a certain number of cases we needs to be collected before we reach an interim report or interim status that we can unblind the trial. Therefore, there are uncertainties about timing. But if everything moves smoothly, we may expect to having some data around end of November or even December. But it's still having some uncertainties around that. We need to keep a close look on that.
Of course, the discovery of an effective vaccine is just the beginning of a process which could lead to the end of the pandemic. As my next guest puts it, a vaccine isn't just magic dust that will be sprinkled over the world to make this all go away. So let's speak now to Dr. Paul Offit. Paul is head of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Paul, what's your take on the way the search for a COVID vaccine is being conducted?
We really just had this virus, SARS-CoV-2, in hand in January. It's been less than a year. You have more than 180 research projects moving forward on this vaccine. You have more than 100 companies across the globe interested in making it. You have billions of dollars serving as a pull mechanism to make it. I think in all likelihood, we will have a vaccine by early next year, which will be the fastest vaccine ever made in history. And I think that it will be safe and effective, but I think we'll soon know when we get the completion of these so-called phase 3 trials, these large tens of thousands of persons, big placebo-controlled, prospective controlled studies, and we'll soon know whether we have a vaccine or not.
Well, as you say, there are a number of phase 3 trials going on, ranging from AstraZeneca in the UK and Johnson & Johnson in the US, but they've had to pause, haven't they, after some adverse effects. Is that a concern, or is that part and parcel of tests of this size?
Right, it's not uncommon. I think because there's so much focus now on these vaccines, any blip is met, you know, with terror. And I think that's what's happened here. They are sort of clinical pauses. They aren't regulatory pauses for the most part. And so whenever there's any possible untoward event, remember, you're looking at a lot of adults, some of whom are older adults. These people can have health problems. And if a health problem occurs within a certain period of time of getting the vaccine, the question is, could the vaccine have done it? Let's stop, wait, take a close look at this patient, take a look at other people who may have gotten this vaccine, who may have had a similar story, and then we can feel more comfortable about moving forward. So I think these sort of clinical pauses occur. You just never really hear about them as we move forward.
And you say as we move forward, we're moving forward at breakneck speed, aren't we, Paul? I mean, you are the co-inventor of a rotavirus vaccine. Briefly tell us in a sentence what that is, but how long did that process take you?
Right. So rotaviruses are a virus that infects the intestinal tract and so causes fever, vomiting, diarrhea, and severe dehydration. This is a virus that killed about 2,000 people a day in the world before we had a vaccine. How long did it take us? It took us about 26 years.
Oh, only 26 years. And now you're talking about getting a COVID vaccine in a year.
Right. There weren't 100 companies trying to make a rotavirus vaccine. There weren't the Health and Human Services, the World Health Organization, and Gates Foundation weren't spending billions of dollars to move this vaccine along. So it went through the normal process of going phase one, then phase two, then phase three, then mass production. Here, those are sort of conflated. The governments have said, look, we'll take the risk out of it. Pharmaceutical companies will pay for the phase three trials, even though they cost hundreds of millions of dollars. We'll pay for mass production, even though we don't know yet whether this vaccine works, or we don't know yet whether it's safe. We're willing to throw away tens of millions of doses if the phase three trial shows that it doesn't work. No pharmaceutical company would ever do that. That's why this is so much faster.
You sit on the U.S. Food and Drug Administration Advisory Committee. What role might you have in deciding which of these vaccines to take up?
Right. So the way the FDA's Vaccine Advisory Committee works is we're presented with data. In this case, it'll be phase three data for each of these vaccines. And then we'll decide whether the data are robust enough to say with confidence that it's safe, which is to say that it doesn't have a relatively uncommon severe side effect problem, and whether it's effective and how effective it is, and whether we can say that the data are statistically significant and robust enough to, with confidence, say, okay, here's what we know. I mean, each step of the way, you're just trying to mitigate risk. You're trying to lessen uncertainty. When you do a phase three trial, that doesn't eliminate uncertainty. It doesn't completely eliminate risk. It just tells you that at this point, you think that the data are secure enough that the benefits of the vaccine outweigh its theoretical risks. And that's when you launch a product. And then you make sure you look after the vaccine is already out there to make sure it doesn't have a rare side effect problem, to make sure that the efficacy or effectiveness of the vaccine lasts not just 6 months, which is probably all we'll know, but it lasts a year, 2 years, 3 years. We'll only know that after these vaccines are out there.
But even if we achieve a vaccine, we're still going to be having to be very careful about hygiene measures, aren't we?
Very much so. That's what scares me the most, actually. I mean, suppose you have a vaccine that's 75% effective at preventing moderate to severe disease, which I think we'd all be happy with. That still means one out of every four people who get that vaccine could still get sick from this virus, which means, and because you don't know who that's going to be, we all should really still wear masks and still try to do social distancing until this virus is under control, until we stop spread. When that happens, then I think we can start to breathe a sigh of relief. But until that happens, we need both things. We need both a vaccine, and we need these hygienic measures to be in place.
So what you're saying, in effect, is even if we get a vaccine next year, we're still going to have to be very careful about our personal hygiene and perhaps social distancing for at least another year after that.
Yeah, or whatever length of time it takes before we can say that the so-called contagiousness index, the so-called R-naught, drops to less than one. We now know that the virus isn't spreading in any important way. Once that happens, then I think we can start to loosen those hygienic measures.
And lastly, is one vaccine enough, especially with a virus that's likely to mutate?
Yeah, I mean, well, this is a so-called single-stranded RNA virus. So it mutates, like all single-stranded RNA viruses, it mutates. The question is, does it mutate in a functionally important way? And I think what you're asking is, will it mutate in a manner the way that influenza mutates, that you would need a yearly vaccine because the virus is always mutating away from the vaccine? To date, that doesn't appear to be true. This virus is more like the other single-stranded RNA viruses, like measles or mumps or German measles, which, although they mutate, don't mutate away from the vaccine. I think that's going to be the story with this virus. So hopefully we won't need a yearly vaccine.
The Alps, timeless and changing.
Every year we have to add an additional 80 steps. It's losing like 6 meters of ice every year.
Spring is now 3 to 4 weeks earlier than it was 50 or 60 years ago.
The restaurant has shifted with the glacier beneath it. Climate change, helping to push a hut over the border from one country to another.
The Alps, timeless and changing. Online now at cgtn.com/Europe.
6 months ago, here on The Agenda, we spoke to Dr. Jerome Kim. And Dr. Kim is Director General of the International Vaccines Institute. And he told me then of the unprecedented speed and the level of global cooperation behind the search for a COVID vaccine. And I'm delighted to say he can now join us again from Seoul. Dr. Kim, when we spoke back in May, you were pretty optimistic about the speed at which scientists had come together to work towards a vaccine. Are you still feeling as positive?
In 10 months' time, we've moved 8 or 9, depending on how you count them, vaccines forward. into phase three, the final stage of testing for safety and effectiveness. And that's really a remarkable task, given the fact that we knew absolutely nothing about this virus in December of 2019. So we have made a lot of progress. We're still waiting to see the results, and, you know, our fingers are crossed.
We've heard a lot about the ethics of the breakneck speed with which scientists are rushing to find the vaccine. Do you have any reservations about the speed with which we're rushing into this?
So I think the speed is appropriate. And the reason I think it's appropriate is that, you know, those countries and companies that are following what we call good clinical practices, which is an international standard for scientific integrity and ethical conduct of trials, as long as they're following that, then we should have a way forward that includes the kinds of safeguards that we normally associate with the vaccines that are used in the UK or in Europe or in North America. You know, we will still use the same targets for the efficacy, for whether the vaccine is working to protect against disease or infection. You know, we will still have at least 2 months, if you look at the US FDA guidance, of safety data on vaccines before even an emergency use authorization is considered. So, you know, the bulk of safety events occur within the first 2 months. So again, the US FDA is being conservative and trying to evaluate these vaccines as best they can, given the fact that to balance against the speed with which we're going, you know, the incredible human tragedy that's been wrought by this pandemic, you know, with millions of people infected and a million people or more now who succumbed to the virus, we really have to move forward with a vaccine solution, given the fact that so many countries are now in the second wave of what seems to be a major new set of infections and hospitalizations.
But the worry, the concern is, in some countries, the decision to go ahead with that vaccine may be political more than medical, because there is a race to be first past the post. And in that race, when do you think we will see the first vaccine past that post?
So I still think that the target of seeing evidence of safety and efficacy by the end of this year or early next year is a reasonable one, actually not for one, but maybe for several of the vaccine candidates. I think that the idea that this is a race is not correct, because is the prize going to go to the first company that generates evidence of safety and efficacy, or is it really going to go to that group that will be able to deploy hundreds of millions of doses of a safe and effective vaccine at a reasonable cost and really begin to impact the epidemic? And I think it's going to be, you know, we're going to have to manufacture high quality vaccine at a reasonable price, and we're going to have to get it out there. We're going to have to take it the last mile and inject it into the arms of people who need it.
And how difficult is that distribution process going to be, do you think?
Yeah, I think the head of WHO was right when he said, you know, the vaccine itself is not the silver bullet. There's a huge amount of work that will need to go into distributing this vaccine to 8 billion people, you know, which will mean that the vaccine is to be transported under appropriate conditions, and most vaccines need to be refrigerated, so somewhere between 2 and 8 degrees centigrade, and then have to be injected. And we're talking not only about injecting children, which we're actually pretty good at worldwide these days, we're talking about injecting adults and teenagers. And how are we going to get these populations together safely and vaccinate them? And how are we going to collect information about whether the vaccine is having any adverse events as we go from tens of thousands of people in the clinical trials?
Well, I'm hoping that you will answer all those questions.
I hope to be a part of the solution. I think everyone who works on vaccines views COVID-19 as a particular challenge. We've been asked to develop a vaccine technology in really an amazingly short period of time. And the companies and countries and organizations have banded together and really done a remarkable job at trying to get out a vaccine that meets the standards for safety and efficacy that we would apply to other vaccines. And you know, the fact that, you know, companies and countries are working as quickly as they can will make it look like a race. And maybe we'll have more than one vaccine at the end of the day.
That brings us to the end of another edition of The Agenda. Remember, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. You can also find us on CGTN Europe Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
The most interesting questions.
Are there other living beings beyond Earth?
Will man or machine be in charge?
Great question.
Always have more than one answer.
Well, hold on, let me just draw up a list.
And always come from more than one person.
That's where the credibility lies.
The concept of having a machinery which is alive and evolving didn't wait for us.
The end of inequality of incomes and wealth around the world, can you imagine how difficult that is at the moment to achieve?
Every episode, Stephen Cole, Murray Beveridge, and some of the brightest minds out there shed light on the answers to some of the most intriguing questions.
There are two ways of looking at this.
Machines can't really discriminate between civilian and military targets.
The Answers Project.
Maybe we need to just look at this in a bit more detail.
Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
The Answers Project, a new podcast from CGTN Europe.